The views and comments expressed on The Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on The Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
Live from the Space Talk Radio Studios, it's The Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting live to four continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy, here's the founder and host of The Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Hello, everybody. This is your host, David Livingston. Welcome to the Sunday Space Show. Thank you for joining us today. Let's go through our announcements and get right to the heart of our program today. If you would like to call in and talk with our guest today, Dr. Jim Pass, that toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. We don't have call screeners. Let the phone ring until it's answered. When it's answered, you're on the air, but just sit tight until we're able to get to you. Also, if you want to communicate with us by email, three accounts to use, dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, or thespaceshow@gmail.com. And then for those of you that prefer chat on Instant Messenger, ICQ, or CompuServe, that screen name is Space Show Chat, all one word. Keep checking on the message board at spaceinvestor.com, which is made available to us at the courtesy of Ken Schweitzer, and we appreciate that very much. And then check out our website, thespaceshow.com. You'll see the comprehensive newsletter there with all of the coming events and the news, and it changes when something new develops or needs to be updated. You can subscribe to the shortened email version. Just send an email to drspace@thespaceshow.com. All of our programs are archived on the website in MP3 format. You can easily download them and play them. If you have an iPod or an MP3 player, you can subscribe to our podcast feed. You will see the link for the RSS feed on the website as well as on the newsletter. Visit the Space Show store when you have a chance, and also the Support the Space Show button. We appreciate very much your help, and it is very meaningful for us, so thank you for your contributions and for your interest in the subjects that the Space Show is interested in bringing to all of you. And our guest today, Dr. Jim Pass of astrosociology.com. That is his company and his website, www.astrosociology.com. Dr. Pass received his doctorate in sociology in 1991 from USC with a special in deviance. He became increasingly uninterested in that topic as he got closer to graduation. And since he was interested in both sociology and space exploration, he thought about putting the two together after reading Alan Toff's web article entitled Positive Consequences of SETI Before Detection, in which he made a comment about creating something called social astronomy or astrosociology. Dr. Pass immediately purchased the domain astrosociology.com and began the 8-month-long development of the definition and purview of astrosociology. The California Sociological Association, CSA, has allowed him to organize a dedicated astrosociology session for the second year in a row, which is going to be this year at a Sacramento conference from November 11th to 12th. And in contrast, the national organization, the American Sociological Association, ASA, has denied his proposal for a special session in 2006, saying that while the topic has great merit, its novelty will probably attract fewer attendees than the other submissions, meaning the mainstream submissions. Where have we heard that before in the space world? His mission is to bring sociology into the space age, even if he has to do it kicking and screaming all the way. And he wants to collaborate with the other social sciences, such as humanities and the space community, for the benefit of everyone and space exploration. So it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show, Dr. Pass, and to start exploring and being aware of this important topic. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Before we start, we do have some giveaways that we're going to do today for people who ask questions to the show. And Dr. Pass has kindly offered some coffee tea mugs for people. You want to explain the program to them, Jim?
Yes. We can offer this the mug for anyone who whose question is used on the air.
And that's telephone, chat, or email, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and if you do email a question or call in or chat, you need to make sure you send me your mailing address and your full name so that I can forward it to Jim so that your mug can be sent to you. Let's start out, because I'm sure a lot of the listeners are going to be very much like I was. Astro what? It's even a hard word to roll off the tip of your tongue. So astrosociology, what actually is it?
Okay. Well, I think you can just think of astrobiology and kind of get an idea. But astrosociology is the study of the subset of social phenomena that involves the relationship between space and society. The study of what I call astrosocial phenomena. And astrosocial phenomena was a term that was difficult to come up with for me. And when I did come up with it, trying to meld, you know, the idea of space and society, I wasn't sure it made sense for a while until I talked to others and got some positive feedback on the term. So I think it's important, you know, to think of astrosociology as basically the study of human behavior related to outer space.
You mentioned just a minute ago, think of astrobiology, but I have done several shows on astrobiology, and there are, you know, NASA departments and websites, and I've had guests on at the astrobiology department over at Ames Research Center in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Is the term astrosociology as widely used and as common and as accepted, or is it still being developed?
It represents the challenge that I face and that my supporters and members face. It's now a very small, really widely unknown field. And I think it's relevant to astrobiology in the sense that when you listen to astrobiologists talk about what they're doing and its benefits to society, they start talking about how societies will be affected and how culture supports it, and so on. So they're talking about astrosociological types of issues, even before they know anything about astrosociology. So I think it's interesting that, you know, that it fits in that respect.
When I introduced you, I mentioned that the California Professional Association is having special sessions on this at their conference, and yet the national won't. Why is that? Do they not like space? Do they think that this is really not part of their purview and it's about space not being popular or accepted? Where do you think the resistance is in the professional organization and community?
That's really an unknown. I can make some educated guesses. But right now, you know, we're conducting a survey among ASA members to find out their views about astrosociology and space in general as a topic of study. But I would say that for the most part, there's really an indifference, and there, you know, the ASA is the national organization, and they are more, you know, focused on their tradition, the mainstream of sociology, and so something new is going to take a little bit of prodding to get in there, I think. Giving them credit, however, they did accept my paper this year, which relates to the idea that space phenomena exist, or astrosocial phenomena exist, I should say, and because they exist, they should be studied. And it's based on Peter Berger's book, a sociologist who wrote a book, Invitation to Sociology, in 1963, which basically states that if something exists, even if you don't like it, he's talking about things like deviance and things like that, that people may not like, you still have the obligation to study it. And so I use that argument, you know, to say that if that's the case, then why is the sociology of space, if you want to call it that, or of outer space, I should say, not studied? It's not really a new thing, because in 1983, B.J. Bluth tried to get the sociology of outer space accepted, and no one has ever succeeded so far. Even in the ASA, there's something called exosociology that was attempted, and that didn't make it either.
What is the decision-making process in the ASA that would prevent this from, you know, getting accepted? Is there a committee? Is there like a peer review group?
Yeah, it's a very formalized committee set up for different areas. And one of the thing that was denied this year was, or for next year, was to the program committee. And I basically offered the idea of a special session dedicated to astro sociology and tried to give them reasons why it was important for sociology and so on. And they reviewed it, and they came up with a statement that you read over the air earlier.
That's amazing. Yeah. That sounds like it's probably one of the more narrow-minded professional organizations I've run across.
Well, it's highly traditional, let's put it that way. You know, new ideas don't become accepted overnight. But the SCAT is a section in that organization, Science, Knowledge, and Technology, which did accept the paper. So there is at least one faction within the ASA that sees it as important or at least interesting.
Well, ultimately you will prevail, but it seems absurd to have to go through this type of reasonable test, I guess is how I would describe it, reasonableness, some sort of a test of that to convince a bunch of people that what you're doing is real.
I kind of expected it. You know, if you think about, we're nearing the 50th anniversary of the space age, and sociology has been absent for the most part. There obviously was something going on there that didn't make space. You know, somebody, I guess, or some committee down in the past decided it wasn't important, and
so
it never went anywhere.
When you say it's been absent for nearly the 50 years, so there aren't even NASA programs or research or funding opportunities or, you know, grant opportunities for sociology in space, or even from the Russians?
There are. I'm speaking strictly from the sociological community point of view. NASA has programs. They look at, for example, the social implications of SETI research and things like that. So there is some activity going on. But in terms of the mainstream sociological community, I don't really see anything that exists. It's kind of fragmented if it does exist. A lot of times, you know, a book is written, for example, if there's a shuttle explosion or some unfortunate accident with NASA or something like that. But on an ongoing basis, there's not really any body of literature that exists that people can contribute to.
If I wanted to study and get a degree, an undergraduate or a graduate degree in sociology, are there any schools or any classes or programs that take you into the space part of this subject?
Not outer space. If you look at the sociology of space, if you look it up in Google, for example, you'll get things like social space and geographical space, urban space. But outer space is not the first thing you'll come up with, if you do come up with it at all. So it's not something that's common. And that's one thing that I want to try to introduce, is to encourage professors to include astrosociology into their intro to sociology courses when they talk about science and technology.
Are there any textbooks that address it, or any resources that address it that a professor could use?
There are, but they're not written by sociologists for the most part. In part two of my inaugural essay, for which I used to kind of introduce astrosociology, in the bibliography or the reference section, I put next to the names of the authors their specialty, and you don't find very many sociologists there. A lot of them are psychologists, anthropologists, historians, and things like that. Those are good books. There are good books out there that people can use as a starting point.
So you mentioned a minute ago SETI. So does SETI play a role in this? I know the SETI work is all done privately now. It's not government, although maybe NASA does something with it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's talk that NASA might get back into it, but I'm not sure either. It's the implications of detecting life. Think about what kinds of impact that might have on the various institutions and social groups in society. For example, religion. Some religious groups can handle, especially if we talk about extraterrestrial intelligence. Some religious groups can handle that kind of news, but others can't really incorporate it into their dogma because they state that human beings are the only intelligent creatures in the universe. And so how are those types of organizations going to deal with that? Are they just going to ignore it, you know, or what's going to happen? Are they going to start a social movement against SETI research in the future? Other religious groups that will be able to handle it without any problem and incorporate it into their dogma. So that kind of change will take place.
Well, let me ask you about that, because there's this very famous, you know, research thing that talks about disclosing the existence of ET life or artifacts, where it said the two communities that would be the most devastated and would need to be the most protected would be the scientific community and the religious communities.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people in the alternative ET kind of communities and world believe that this doctrine is in force and is largely why they claim there are cover-ups of, you know, ET visitations and other things. So I'm not really looking to go down the road of that alternative world. But if you said that religious dogmas would be able to accommodate it, you know, I hear late night radio sometimes, and you know, religious people will call in and talk about ET being the agent of Satan. You know, and I've heard these shows myself.
Uh-huh.
So, do you really think that you know, religions as a whole would be able to adopt with the you know, real proof that there was some type of extraterrestrial intelligence? And then on the other side of that, I've interviewed lots of scientists who are so absolutely adamant that it's all nonsense and BS that I think they have the shock of their life if their science changed before their very eyes. I don't know how they would cope with having to recount years and years of statements and research and ways of thinking. That's just my own personal observations. What do you think would happen in the broader description of the scientific and the religious community as we find more and more evidence for some sort of extraterrestrial life, you know, outside there, someplace in space?
Okay. Well, religion as a whole is an institution that is very diverse in terms of the belief systems and so on. So some religious groups will be able to incorporate the discovery of life, even if it's microbial, while others will not be able to do so as easily or if at all. So you're gonna get different kinds of reactions, and in fact, you'll even get, I'm sure, new cults develop that either, you know, focus on extraterrestrial life as the center of their belief system, or perhaps even new ones that look at extraterrestrials as you know, Satan. And that brings up another thing about astrosociology's purview in terms of you know, UFOs and pseudosciences, so-called. Astrosociology covers this kind of area in, to the extent that it's part of our culture, but not to the extent that it's studying, you know, the existence of UFOs or anything like that. That's really outside of the purview. And in terms of science, I think in a lot of ways, science is going to be generally, even though it's difficult to change in a lot of cases, it's kind of evolving to the point where I think the existence of life, especially non-intelligent life, is becoming more and more acceptable to scientists. Just, you know, the Mars rover mission, for example, is coming up with all kinds of findings related to water on Mars and perhaps even a suitable climate for life in the past. So I think science might have an easier time of it than religion.
What about governments? Is there can you look at government's reaction to this, or their potential behavior to this, from the sociological point of view? Is fear a big motivating issue with government? I don't really know how to phrase the question. I mean, I would think that there would be a real push to preserve the status quo, and something like this might be very upsetting to the status quo.
Yeah, this would be something that would have to be studied as it occurs, but probably protection of the status quo would be one of the main approaches. And so, you know, the existence of extraterrestrial life would have to be evaluated in terms of whether it poses a threat or not and that kind of thing. And if it doesn't pose a threat, governments probably will not react harshly unless you know, the citizenry reacts in some kind of negative or chaotic way to the news.
Despite the protestations from SETI that they would make everything public available almost instantaneously, do you believe that?
I believe that they want to make sure that their findings are correct. That's one thing that they have to do is, you know, get secondary confirmations of,
right.
of that. And I'm sure they realize that something like that probably couldn't be kept under wraps by every country in the world. So I think probably it would eventually come out, if not immediately, as they expect or they say.
We have just turned the corner into the 21st century, and we have a president who has articulated this expansive vision that the government appears to be gearing up to implement. We're going back to the moon. We're changing NASA around to accommodate this vision. Eventually, we're going to be going to Mars and doing other useful things. So it would seem to me that this entire emphasis on space and a vision for space and actual activities that we're going to be doing would catapult astrosociology to the top of almost any priority list, because this is going to have a huge impact on society, not just in the United States, but elsewhere, especially if this program really does get implemented. What do you see happening as a result of the president's vision plan and all the changes that are going on right now?
Well, I think, you know, after the last Apollo mission, NASA and the government in general became kind of aimless in terms of what their program was. You know, we created the shuttle and so on, but it wasn't really a coherent program. I think this will give, you know, societies around the world a better idea of what governments are doing in space and how it's going to affect them. And I think astrosociology should be in place to document and study and understand all the different effects as they occur. And we even have the privatization of space coming up. You know, I think that's going to become more and more part of the mix, especially as our resources on Earth, you know, deplete and become too expensive to extract. We're going to have to perhaps, and this has been written about extensively, mine asteroids, beam, you know, solar energy via microwave down to Earth and get energy from other sources, as well as the exploration. So I think astrosociology is going to become much more relevant in the 21st century.
Well, I think if the suborbital tourism market takes off, as many people believe it will, within the next 3 or 4 years, with ordinary people coming back from having been in space, even if it's just suborbital for 4 or 5 minutes, mm-hmm. that alone is going to have a huge impact on society.
I believe so. And, you know, I think we're going to have tourism, space tourism at some point. The Japanese have been always interested in developing that kind of industry. And you know, I think what we'll have is we'll have NASA kind of doing the big things that are scientific in nature for the most part and don't really reap profits immediately, doing their kind of thing, their scientific, you know, knowledge for knowledge's sake. And we'll have the private industry groups and corporations working on things that make profits. And both of those things are going to have impacts on regular people and societies.
I've got a series of questions from Marshall, and I'll see if I can get a couple of them in before we go to the break. One of the questions Marshall says is, when there's a space shuttle accident, there are major gloom and doom predictions from all sorts of pay people. Are the soothsayers hoping to get famous by luck, or is there a deep emotional problem here? And I would sort of change his question to say, what is the impact on society of one of these shuttle accidents like Columbia, and what does it take for society to overcome that impact or heal or really put it behind it, or is it not such a big thing on society as a whole?
I think it is a big thing in the short term, in terms of, you know, it does involve a tragic loss of life, and it does have an impact in disrupting the space program. But if you look at it on a large-scale historical basis, you know, even 50 years, almost 50 years into the space age, we're just starting. You know, we're basically in rickety boats, you know, along the shores, not venturing out into the vast oceans, if you want to make a comparison. So even though it's going to, they have short-term effects, and these short-term effects can be large in nature, I don't think they're going to stop the space program from, you know, moving forward in the long term.
Is the effect of one of these space accidents, these tragedies, significantly greater on society than a jumbo jet having a fatal accident?
That's an interesting question. I think that's something that you have to resolve via survey, you know, doing a study on it. But potentially, I think, even though the loss of life is usually smaller, it may have a larger impact because of the fact that the space program currently is tied to national pride and you know, comparisons among other between the United States, for example, and other nations. And so a setback for the United States makes us look bad compared to the other space capable nations.
So as the space community grows and activity were to grow and become more ordinary, were there accidents 20 years from now, they might be treated much more like an airplane accident?
To the extent that they're more common and
more mainstream.
More mainstream and even safer than they are today. You know, we know how dangerous a space shuttle is in terms of getting it into space and landing it successfully. But if we can do what Burutan claims we can do in terms of getting even suborbital flights to be equally safe to commercial airlines, then I think, in the fact also that you'll have these space flights taking place on a private scale, private companies, as opposed to the government space flight, that's also going to have an effect.
Let me see if I can work this one more question in from Marshall. And again, I'm taking a little bit of liberty with this question to broaden it a little bit. But the United States is an advanced social and cultural and economic nation. What happens in third world countries with issues such as astrosociology? And for example, if we ever do get solar powered anything up there or solar powered space stations, you probably might be able to see that reflection from here on Earth. Will third world countries react adversely to looking up in a day or a night sky and seeing reflections from man-made space bodies, especially from the developed world? So I guess, overall, what is the third world attention to these issues or the impact on the third world of these issues?
Well, I think, you know, the developing world is diverse in terms of how they perceive the United States and how they relate to the United States. You know, in this area and just about any other area, we're better off trying to make friends among nations as opposed to enemies. And so I think the ones that are resentful of the United States might have, you know, a negative kind of reaction to that kind of sight, you know, in the sky. But I think a lot of nations that are pro or at least neutral to the United States won't have a negative impact. I think what we need to do in space travel and space exploration is to try to involve all the nations, you know, cooperate with other nations as much as possible, even if it's just a small type of participation, so that they can feel like they're part of the overall program.
I'll do this one more before we go to break. It's an email question from Sarah in Tucson, and Sarah, if you would like to have a mug, I need your full name and mailing address. Her question is, what is the state of astrosociology in the United Nations?
I don't think the members of the United Nations even know of astrosociology at this point.
Well, they have a big space section in the UN.
Right. But that, you know, there is space policy on the international level. And I think that's another area where formally, you know, adopting astrosociology and taking advantage of the research that can be provided, just like they do in other areas, would be beneficial to the United Nations and any other political body.
And what about ESA? Is this subject addressed at all in the European Space Association?
I believe it is. I've seen some international engineering associations addressing this issue. For example, there's something, let's see if I can remember this, the IAEA, I think, the International Astronautics Association.
Right.
They had the first conference this year about the social impact of space on society. So I think even engineers and space scientists are starting to formally look at this kind of issue. What I hope is that even though it's called astrosociology, maybe we can use this term as a kind of a banner so that we can all collaborate together.
Okay, great place. We are going to take our first break. Our guest today, Dr. Jim Pass, will be back with more of your questions and comments in about 2 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners and sponsors for their support. Having a spacefaring society and culture is not only important, it's crucial for humanity. It is also a large undertaking for everyone involved in this mission, and The Space Show is no exception. So join with us by visiting www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Please make a contribution which will help us in continuing to bring you our programming and services, all free of charge. The Space Show also has available opportunities for advertising and sponsorship on air, the archived programs, the newsletter, and the website. For information, contact Dr. Livingston at drspace@thespaceshow.com or 415-435-6018. Again, The Space Show thanks you for listening and for your support.
The mission of The Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
Welcome back to The Space Show today. This is your host, David Livingston, our guest today, Dr. Jim Pass. And again, you can call the show with your comments or questions for Dr. Pass. That toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. It is available at this time. Email dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, or thespaceshow@gmail.com. And if you use chat with Instant Messenger, ICQ, or CompuServe, the screen name is all one word, Space Show Chat. And remember, if you'd like to receive an astrosociology mug, make sure you give us your full name and give me your mailing address so that your mug can be sent to you. Jim, during the break, I asked you if you were the only person that was really pushing hard for this within the professional organizations, and you seem to indicate that you were one of only a few, and our discussion sort of led into your saying that there seems to still be a problem with careers for students or for people who want to follow astrosociology, and that they often get linked very much to pseudoscience, and they then get censored pretty much the way scientists who have unusual or out-of-the-box theories find that they get censored or feel somehow oppressed. Can you elaborate on this?
Yes, I think it's similar to what happens with, or what happened in the past with SETI research, where there's a tie-in to so-called pseudosciences, or that's used perhaps as an excuse not to, adopt astrosociology in this case. And I think the lack of legitimacy that it has at this point may cause, and this is conjecture, may cause sociologists and other social scientists to be reluctant to declare themselves as astrosociologists because it may harm their careers. It may be seen as, a black eye, and they may have to face the loss of credibility and so on. I'm not really sure how bad that would be, but I think that's a concern that people would have if they wanted to pursue astrosociology, especially if they already have a successful career.
It's too bad that that's the way things are unfolding. It just it seems that there should be more broad-minded people. I don't know how you get around these hurdles, though. They just seem to be inherent in our structures, in our institutions, in our peer review professional groups.
Yeah, there's another area is getting a publication. It's been difficult to get anything published as well in this area. Although I'm continuing to try. So in the meantime, I'm just going to post my papers on my site and see where it goes. But there is a ray of hope in terms of students. For example, I gave a survey or actually it was an extra credit question on the final exam. I gave them a choice of answering two things, and one of them had to do with whether they would take an introduction to a master sociology course. And all but two of them stated that they would, that they found it intriguing and interesting. One person said, no, I wouldn't do it. And then at the end of the answer, came to the conclusion that because she was writing so much about it, that perhaps she's more interested now than when she started answering the question in the first place. So I think, and you know, also there's, if you look at the directory on my website of formal supporters, many of them are graduate students and doctoral students. So I think, you know, the next generation may be the one that's going to help me to propel this into a positive situation.
Are you teaching right now? Do you have a class or students that you're teaching on?
Yeah, I'm teaching right now an introduction to sociology class.
Where do you teach?
At Long Beach City College in California.
And what's the student reaction when you bring in the space subject?
In two classes, I've had two very different reactions. One class was totally uninterested for whatever reason. I even asked them if, you know, if they wanted a pen, you know, that kind of thing, just to see what their interest was. And the class I had this last semester was the one that I gave the question to. They were all interested, except, you know, except for maybe one or two people. So I suspect really what I think that students reflect the public in terms of, you know, the Gallup poll, the latest one I'm aware of, showed a 68% you know, support of the space program. I think that translates into the student population as well. And so if 68% of the student body of any given college or university is interested in space or supports the space program, you're going to have some students that are going to be interested in taking the course in astrosociology.
Have you detected any feelings, thoughts, pressure from the administration or other professors at the school on your addressing these subjects, or do they even know about it?
I've told them about it, and I've gotten no response. I've sent them emails telling them what I was going to do, and I haven't had any responses. And recently I sent them an email, the two people that are responsible for making decisions, at least initially. And I'm waiting, you know, to find out if if they allow me to have a, you know, create a course, introduction to astrosociology. But it's probably going to be a difficult road. I talked to the dean, and the dean was pretty positive about it. So we'll see where it goes. I'm not sure yet.
Have you noticed a gender difference in the interest, or any minority or race difference or anything like that?
The only thing I've been able to detect informally is that female students are more interested than male students so far.
And is that true in the study of sociology as a whole, that there's more female interest than male interest?
I was kind of surprised, actually. I thought it would be more equal or maybe more male-dominated. But this is not really a scientific study because I've just... It's only based on two classes, and I've only made, you know, informal observations about it.
During our break, also, you mentioned that there was unfortunately always some sort of a loose tie-in to astrology. And I actually have a question from Marshall about this. And he said in Roman times, emperors like Augustus, Octavian, Tiberius used events in the sky and astrology as excuses to do almost anything, from killing off political rivals to whatever they wanted to do. Are you able to estimate what percent of the world's population might still be motivated, spooked, enraged, or take action by things that happen, such as meteors, comets, planetary movements? Is it a real problem or just an opportunist type of problem? And, of course, we saw all hell break loose even in the United States with Hail Bob. We had the group down in Southern California that did the mass suicide.
Right.
So it affects people in this country as well as in, you know, some of the lower developed world. But is there a big portion of the world that still, you know, goes wacky with this type of phenomena?
Well, I think, you know, space phenomena that are easily detected by the public will have an impact, and historically they have had an impact. Whether it's positive or negative kind of depends on the social conditions at the time and the groups or the individuals involved. But, you know, the Hale Bopp thing is a good example of, you know, a cult kind of popping up based on, you know, some space phenomenon that occurs. And so I think it's going to continue to have impact on human beings, yes.
And the study of astrosociology would not be to prevent that impact, but to better understand it, better apply it to what's going on, to better decision-making? What would be the outcome of the study of astrosociology?
It would be like you know, any other sociological study or any other social science study, basically trying to understand the behavior involved and then making the findings available to government officials or anybody else to make decisions, policy decisions based on that, on the findings.
A question by email from Gene in Salt Lake City. And again, I need your name and address for the coffee mug. Gene says, ultimately, settlements are planned for the moon and Mars. What will be the sociological consequences of, say, the United States for putting Americans on a permanent settlement or on a permanent settlement on the moon or Mars?
Okay. I think that's a very good question, because one of my main areas of concern is that if we develop space communities in the manner that we do now, we focus, in my opinion, too much on engineering and too much on you know, so-called human factors, just to keep the individuals alive. But if you think about a community on the Earth, it's in existence in order to meet social needs. And if you look at a space community, especially one that's isolated and you know, out there for a long duration, the individuals are going to have to depend upon one another. Mission control will not be able to be you know, monitoring them on the same basis as they do now. And so I think you have to look at the community, how it functions, not just in terms of occupational concerns like we have now, whether or not, for example, astronauts are successful in their mission, but also in terms of other aspects, other dimensions of social life, such as, you know, family life and life outside of the occupation. And if that is unsustainable for some reason or you know, comes to some problem, you're going to end up with deviants and other problems that will ultimately affect the occupational performance and quality of life in those communities. So I think astrosociologists should be involved, and this is really applied to astrosociology, but should be involved as well as psychologists and others in planning communities and even being part of the communities themselves to help to cope with problems that come up and to study how these communities function.
It seems to me that again, I just go back to what you said earlier in the show. It's mind-boggling to me that the professional organizations turn their back on this, because this is like the ground floor opportunity to be right there in a field that is going to be just blossoming and so essential for us all and so important for us all as we start pushing out and doing more and more things in the private sector and the government and public sector. I just don't get it. I wish the people from your organization were listening to this show, from the national organization were listening. I'd like them to call in and justify their narrow-mindedness, but I guess that's not going to happen because they wouldn't listen to the show because they don't believe it's a topic that they need to consider yet.
Well, I think what we need to do is get them out of their status quo by putting pressure on them. And so the best way to do that is to basically move forward in conducting astrosociological research and making it obvious how important it is. And I think over time that will change.
Well,
at least, you know, that's the basis of my actions.
You sent me some information and possible questions before the show, and a couple have really caught my mind. So one of them is you differentiate between space-capable for a society and a spacefaring society, and I use Spacefaring Society for just about everything. It's in my mission and my vision statements. It's I use it for this show all the time. It's in my academic paper. I never thought of anything about space capable. How do you differentiate, and when do you think one is more applicable than the other?
I think a Spacefaring Society is one in which all the institutions in society and social life itself is affected by space operations in some way, space activity in some way. You know, in other words, it becomes ubiquitous in society. It's a kind of similar to the idea of an urban society in sociology, where it's just the definition is based on the fact that the society is characterized by urban life on a large scale. I call all nations today that can get into low Earth orbit space capable because their activities are isolated from the rest of society at this point. And so, you know, they're not. The society itself is not engaged in, you know, space commerce, for example, or exploration on a private, in terms of private exploration, as opposed to just, for example, in our society, NASA being really the only agency or the only organization that's doing anything on a large scale. So I think it's a continuum from space-capable societies to space-faring societies. I talked to Albert Harrison about this, and he pretty much agrees with me, even though he wrote the book Spacefaring. Spacefaring is kind of, you know, is basically a verb, so that applies to any society. But in terms of a spacefaring society, using those two words together, I would say that it really applies to something more, a social reality in which, you know, space or astrosocial phenomena, which are the social and cultural patterns, are ubiquitous in society and characterize the different groups and institutions.
And applied astrosociology, what is meant by that term?
Applied astrosociology is the idea that you use sociological knowledge and research findings for the betterment of space exploration and ultimately for the betterment of society. So it's a practical type of approach, as opposed to just doing sociological research for its own sake, seeking knowledge for its own sake. It has to do with using that knowledge for a practical basis. For example, like I was saying, studying and even planning space communities.
Here's a note from Chris in Seattle, and again. I need addresses and names for the mugs. I need to keep stressing that, I guess. What Chris says is, I'm an engineer. Why would I care about astrosociology or any sociology? I never studied it in school. I don't use it in my career work. It doesn't seem to be an issue that concerns me in my engineering perspective, analysis, and work. What can you say about that?
Well, I think for one thing is that astrosociology studies astrosocial phenomena, and the work that space engineers do is basically astrosocial phenomena. So their work is being studied by astrosociologists, or will be studied by astrosociologists, and it will be put in the context of how their activities affect society and how society affects their activities as well. The other aspect is that we all live in society, in a society, and we all have some real connection to that society. So anything that occurs in that society, especially if it's in your own profession, for example, is important to understand from different bases, as well as just the engineering basis.
Would an engineer or a scientist consider astrosociological effects in the way they design or carry out their work?
Well, you know, that's one of the things about NASA that I think is kind of, in my estimation, has been a mistake historically. I'm kind of modest in this, of course, but I think that NASA should adopt astrosociology along with astrobiology, because the social sciences, the humanities, all have a bearing. They all have their unique perspectives on how life in space can be made successful. And if you don't take advantage of that knowledge, you're going to be more blind in terms of your creation of space missions and communities, and you're ultimately going to be less successful, in my estimation. Engineers, that's another basis for engineers. I think engineers and social scientists should work together in terms of developing space habitats and so on.
Are there other disciplines where engineers and social scientists work together that would be a model for the space community?
I think probably to some extent right now, it's kind of on a smaller scale. It's kind of like the human factors work that goes on, and mostly psychologists and engineers working together. But this would be, expanding that to include all the social sciences, including sociology. So when I talk about astrosociology, I think we should focus more on astro than sociology.
Is there an underlying theory of astrosociology that it should be well known and discussed in the space community, the space advocate communities? For example, in all the years I've been involved in the space advocate community and the multiple organizations and the conferences, I have yet to hear this topic ever discussed.
Well, that's another goal of mine, is to have astrosociology or something like it have a social science component in every major space conference, because I think it is overlooked, and I think that there is a need for it, as we've been talking about. In terms of a theory of astrosociology, currently there are no theories per se, because my major emphasis right now is just to get the subfield within sociology established, and also the field itself in general established among space scientists and social scientists. I think that future astrosociologists, and myself included, I guess, will develop theories consistent with the definition of astrosociology as time goes on. At the same time, there are some assumptions, for example, astrosocial phenomena affect society. There is an interactive relationship with non-astrosocial phenomena, that is, space activities versus non-space activities, or space organizations versus non-space organizations. Astrosocial phenomena contribute to social and cultural change. And as we've talked about, astrosocial phenomena will become more influential as we make our way through the 21st century. So to ignore astrosocial phenomena, in my mind, represents an ongoing historical error by the discipline of sociology as well as the space community as well.
I think we'll have to get you connected to some of these space advocate organizations and have you start submitting papers and coming to their conferences. They're not peer-reviewed, but you'll make an impression upon quite a few people who will hear what you have to say, and they'll carry it on in their dialogues with people when they lobby Congress, when they talk to people in the private sector, and other things. And I think the advocate community can be very effective in helping to realize the importance of this subject. And we're going to take our next break. Everybody stay right where you are. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Dr. Pass.
The Space Show thanks its listeners and sponsors for their support. Having a spacefaring society and culture is not only important, it's crucial for humanity. It is also a large undertaking for everyone involved in this mission, and The Space Show is no exception. So join with us by visiting www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Please make a contribution which will help us in continuing to bring you our programming and services, all free of charge. The Space Show also has available opportunities for advertising and sponsorship on air, the archived programs, the newsletter, and the website. For information, contact Dr. Livingston at drspace@thespaceshow.com or 415-435-6018. Again, The Space Show thanks you for listening and for your support.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality.
And welcome back to the Space Show. This is your host, David Livingston. Our guest today, Dr. Jim Pass. And again, the toll-free number, 1-866-687-7223. Email dmlivings@yahoo.com or drspace@thespaceshow.com. And chat is all one word, Space Show Chat. Remember, if you want Dr. Pass to send you an astrosociology mug, make sure you include your full name and address in the email. And we have a caller on hold with us. Marshall is here from Saxey, Texas. How are you, Marshall?
Just fine. How are you doing?
Fine. Do you have a question for Dr. Pass?
Yes. I've been thinking a lot about the colonization of the moon and on to Mars, of course. Basically, you're eventually going to end up with a small city, and the small city is going to have one thing for sure, a significant number of women, and eventually children. In fact, I was looking at a little speech by Wernher von Braun, where one of his last speeches, he talked about having children on the moon by the end of the last century. And the obvious problem is, what do you do whenever you've got to have, you know, married couples and children and so on like that in space and in such a tough environment? There's going to be very interesting sociological problems there.
Thank you for your question. Yes, I think you're right about that. And I think, you know, the good thing is that sociology has a long tradition of studying communities and the various institutions of our societies, including the family. And I think that has to be adapted along with, you know, special considerations, as you mentioned, about the harshness of the space environment, the isolation from the rest of the species, you know, when people are isolated on the moon or wherever else. That's why I believe that astrosociologists should be involved in, you know, planning these communities and studying them, you know, being part of the community that, as well, so that the issues that come up, which will be unique in some ways because of the special characteristics of the community, will be studied, and there will be, you know, potentially good answers to the problems that are created.
Are we basically at ground zero in understanding some of the issues that Marshall is talking about?
I believe so. In terms of you know, space community versus a community, although I think, again, you know, the tradition of studying communities on Earth-based society or in Earth-based societies will be helpful as kind of, you know, a starting point for studying space communities. And I think a lot of the same things will apply. You know, everyday life, you have to have certain kinds of, you know, needs basically, you know, met. And if they're not met, then it can start causing problems for individuals and for the community itself. So, you know, that's why I think astrosociology, where, you know, the social sciences, you know, I look at it as a multidisciplinary approach, not just sociology, but all the social sciences and humanities can impact on the problems that develop and also try to avert problems from the beginning.
Another little quick question. You basically implied that you see it being planned from Earth instead of the people that are out there developing it and doing it on their own.
Right. Well, I guess I'm talking about, you know, the first communities are going to be developed from the Earth and then sent out. Once the community is in place, then they're going to have to make their own decisions. You know, they're going to have their own government, their own decision-making process. But in terms of planning the communities initially, you know, that will be done from the Earth because that's where we're starting from at this point.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you.
There are these analog sites on Earth where there is official NASA research going on to try to simulate what might be happening at Mars, and there's also work going on by the Mars Society at the same analog site up in near the North Pole at Houghton Crater, but also the Mars Society has an analog site in Utah and I believe one in Australia. Are you aware or do you know if sociology is part of what they do at these analog sites, and is astrosociology applicable to trying to figure out how to simulate Mars on these analog sites?
Yeah, astrophysiology is interested in anything related to space and human behavior. So, you know, space education, space advocacy, that's their effects on society. That's a basic area that is, you know, under the purview of astrophysiology. In terms of knowledge of their programs, I've sent them emails in the past without any response. I'd like to find out whether or not they're including sociology. But, you know, an interesting example is the President's Commission on Moon, Mars, and Beyond, if you remember that.
Correct.
To my knowledge, and I didn't see every news conference, but I don't believe that they had any panels with social scientists. You know, they had computer programmers, advertising specialists, broadcasters, and of course they had professional astronauts and so on. But that kind of shows you, you know, where we're at in terms of involving the social sciences.
Did you, for NASA Houghton Mars, did you send an email to Pascal Lee? Is that a familiar name to you?
I've heard the name, but I don't believe I sent him an email.
Remind me, and he's a good friend, and he's on this show a lot, and he's one of the key people putting that program together, and I will connect you with him.
That'd be great.
He's in the Bay Area at NASA Ames. And then if you want to be connected to Bob or Maggie Zubrin about their role in the analog sites, remind me and I'll connect you there too.
Okay.
Because I think this deserves to be there. I've heard astrobiology as a topic at the Mars Society and at other conferences and things with Chris McKay, but I've not yet come across the topic of astrosociology, and now that I'm aware of it, thank you to you, it's missing, and it's obvious that it's missing.
I'm glad you agree with me. you know, I've only been at this, I've only posted or uploaded the site as of July 15th, 2003.
Now, this is your website, right?
Yeah, and that's the basically the first anybody's heard of it besides Dr. Tuff's, articles. So the interesting thing is, so far I've received 49,000 unique visitors to my site. So it appears that there's some interest there.
Without any professional advertising or sponsorship, right?
The only advertising I have is just, you know, I have some ads, sponsored ads in the search engines. And the only acknowledgement really from NASA is a link to NASA Ames astrobiology site. They have a link the first link to my site.
Okay, and your website is www.astrosociology.com, correct?
Correct.
And is there a way on the website for people to email you or get in touch with you?
Yes, they can email me. There's a web form, and it's probably there because of the spam that I'm getting. It's probably easier to have them use the form.
Okay, so you can use a form, or what we often do on this show is people send you questions through me,
right,
and then I forward them, so we can certainly do that.
Okay, that'd be good.
I strongly urge people to go in and visit the site, because you have a lot of information about this topic on your site.
That would be great. And they can also, if they agree with, supporting and participating, they can join as members or supporters as well.
Are you a 501c3 or just an organization so far?
Right now, it's a sole proprietorship, so there's no tax benefits for that.
Okay, I have the inevitable question. I keep hoping that the space community is going to get beyond this question, but clearly we must not be doing a good job in answering it on the collective basis. This one comes from Claudia, and Claudia's in Joplin, Missouri. And again, Claudia, if you'd like the mug, I need full name and mailing address. Claudia's question is very simple. She says, we can't get it together with sociology to get along on this planet. Why should we put any resources or energy or effort into taking our misfits and our miscreant ways into space? Don't you think that you sociologists and everybody else involved in trying to make the human plight better, that you should focus right here on Earth and not keep thinking about doing things elsewhere?
Okay, and kind of changing that to a sociological question is, why not solve social problems on Earth first before we go into space?
It's always asked.
Well, I think, first of all, for example, if you look at NASA's budget compared to the total federal budget, it's very meager in terms of what we're spending on other things, like, the war in Iraq, for example. But beyond that, NASA research and technology transfer does have impact on society in positive ways. Our air travel is safer because of NASA research on things like, icing. Hurricane prediction is better because of the satellites from NASA that are able to study how hurricanes develop and whether they're likely to be dangerous and which direction they're heading. And we're all familiar with things like Teflon and MRIs and so on. So I think the part of the answer is the fact that space research itself does have application toward solving social problems on Earth. And I think that we get pretty good bang for the buck in terms of that. But then, of course, we have long-term problems. What about our energy needs? If we don't develop cold fusion or some other resource from the Earth itself, we're going to have to go out into space eventually and try to find some resources, whether it's mining asteroids or what have you. Our population explosion is still continuing in developing nations, and so we have to solve that problem. And when we run out of space on Earth, what are we going to do? So I think there are some short-term and long-term and even medium-term solutions coming from space exploration. And we need to look at it in terms of the big picture like that, I think.
Are there any parts of the organized or the private sector or the advocate space community that are already associated with, involved with, working with, or contributing to the discipline of astrosociology?
At this point, I would say not. There isn't anybody who's affiliated with my site or promoting it in a strong way. But I do have approximately 80 people who are supporters and members. So it's kind of slowly growing kind of support network. My next step, I guess, is to formalize this. I have a directory on the site where people can formally acknowledge their support of astrosociology. Currently, there are 25 people who formally have announced their support.
Okay, like, I'm on your website right now, so help me find where that is.
You go, first of all, go to Virtual Community.
Virtual Community?
That's the top right button.
Okay, I got to go back to your homepage, I guess. I'm at
home. It's on every page on the top.
Oh, okay. Okay, Virtual Community, okay.
And then you can look down the list. There's directory, member, I think supporter member directory, something like that. It's a button, one of the big buttons.
I'm member supporter directory page, okay. Okay, and so here I am. And does it list list the name of the people?
Yeah, these are individuals who gave me permission to put their name and their email addresses and even their phone numbers if they want to show their support. So we have some pretty good people on there and also a lot of students.
Oh, I see Al is on there.
Yeah, Al's on there, and Alan Tuff, he was even on there. It's funny, when I met Alan Tuff at Contact, he didn't remember that he coined the term after sociology.
Reed Reiner is on there.
Reed Reiner, yes.
I should interview him. He's a good guy. Well, you'll have my name on there by the end of the day. How's that?
Cool. I appreciate that.
If I can figure out how to do it.
there's a form on the bottom. There's a button there.
Okay. That doesn't mean much for me. Sometimes I'm not.
You can also just give me your information via email.
Technologically savvy, but we will go for it. Is astrosociology more relevant to space than other social sciences such as political science, which of course I think would be very useful when the day comes when we're actually having settlements on the moon and on Mars? At least I would hope that there would be some people that understood the history and the relevance and the workings of politics and political groups and how decisions are made. So how can you compare astrosociology to humanities in general and any specific disciplines within humanities?
Well, I think one of the reasons why I selected the term astrosociology was because I'm a sociologist. And so I wanted to get the subdiscipline created and accepted within my discipline. But in terms of the other disciplines, like you mentioned, political science and psychology, anthropology, and so on, even history, historians have a lot to offer. There's been a lot of research already. One of the problems, I think, is that we don't have a coherent literature to put all this together and to create a place where people can actually find the research easily under one banner. And so I'm offering astrosociology as really a multidisciplinary term so that people can, you know, create and build on research, create a literature and build on the research in a centralized way, in an organized way. Douglas Vekich of the City Institute has told me that he's written even that he's disappointed with city research that is not well organized. And that's pretty, you know, specific. So if you think about space issues generally speaking, space and society issues generally speaking, it's all over the place.
Okay. Do you think that, let me go this way with it. When we do enact the president's vision, going back to the moon, on to Mars, more than likely it's going to have a global representation, pretty similar to what goes on the International Space Station, with a multinational partner. So this question is probably largely being asked out of my ignorance of the field of sociology. I'm being upfront with you on that. Is sociology different in the United States than, say, the various countries that are members of the International Space Station? And if we do have multinational communities on the moon or going to Mars or on an asteroid or on a space hotel, how does the study of sociology and your vision of astrosociology address the multinational component? Or is there a multinational component?
Well, yeah, there's a multicultural component, for sure. And I think that's an area of research, in fact, I would say, in the future, in terms of how well they can cooperate and what the conflicts are based on differing cultural values, for example. Because I think, you know, in terms of a government-scale program, it's going to be much easier to do it internationally because of the cost reductions. So I think sociology is even interested in studying how the multiple nations are able to interact with each other successfully or unsuccessfully in a project like, for example, a space community or a space hotel or whatever. That would be part of the, that would fall under the purview of astrosociology.
So you don't really see the multicultural aspects of space settlement to be any kind of a roadblock or barrier to the study of astrosociology?
I see astrosociology being neutral about it in terms of just studying how things play out, looking at both cooperative aspects and also conflict-laden aspects. And both are likely to occur, you know, simultaneously.
What are your future plans to promote this?
Basically, I'm going to just keep on doing what I'm doing, try to get more members and supporters, and try to grow the astrosociological community so that we can be more influential in various arenas. And I think, you know, try to get a publication, at least the first one going. But basically, I'm going to continue what I'm doing, whether it's a one-person thing or a few-person thing. At the core, I'm just going to keep going at it.
And have you made an effort to go back to your alma mater, USC, and have it become part of a curriculum or guest lecture or something in their department of sociology where you're known?
That's something that I've considered. And I've decided first I'm going to try to do something at Long Beach City College and then also, you know, attack that kind of prospect as well. I think that's a good idea.
Does Long Beach City College have a distant learning or internet studies program, or could you put a form of that course up on a website that allows people everywhere to at least get the education that you're promoting?
Yeah, they do. In fact, the introduction to sociology course I taught last time was a distance learning course. So they do have that program, and I think that's a good idea. a good way to do it.
If there was a way to access that through your website or something, you know, that would, you know, help spread the word. And, you know, even if they don't take the class for credit or register, maybe, you know, they can still get the information.
Yeah, that would probably be part of the what I call the astrosociology curriculum development project, where I'm trying to get people, I'm trying to get different individuals and different programs to try to initiate teaching astrosociology in their departments, and you know, using the experiences, both successful and unsuccessful, to help others who are trying to do it.
We're coming up on the end of the show today, and I always like to give guests the opportunity to pause and reflect and think about what they want to leave with the listeners, sort of their concluding comments, and keeping in mind that once the shows reach archive, they're listened to for months and months into the future. I still have people listening to the old shows from 4 years ago. So what would you like to say to people that would span the element of time and still be current 3 or 4 years from now?
I guess I'd like to focus on, you know, why astrosociology is important. And it's because space exploration is conducted within and by societies, and these activities have consequences for societies and for humanity. So we need a comprehensive social science and humanist approach to understanding how space activities impact on societies, including social and cultural change. And I propose astrosociology as a banner under which this can be accomplished by all the social sciences and the humanities. And I think that it's important to accomplish this because I think, there's a big hole in terms of research in this area, and the research that does exist is not very well organized, and it needs to be organized soon before we do very much more in space.
Do you think that the study of astrosociology can facilitate our getting on with what all of us want to do in space? You know, our settlements, going back to the moon, even getting the private sector to develop space tourism and develop lower cost methods of getting, you know, off this planet. Do you see the study and the more mainstream acceptance of astrosociology as a facilitator?
I think it could serve that purpose because a growing number of students studying astrosociology, for example, or becoming interested in it, will spread the word informally and formally, and I think it could have those kinds of positive results.
Jim, you've left us with a lot to think about. It's not often that a guest comes on the Space Show and introduces us to something that for most of us is completely new, and the study of astrosociology has been completely new to me since I met you a couple of months ago via email, and have been learning more about it with you. And I'm sure it's been new to many of the listeners and those who will hear the program on archive, and I thank you very much for that. And it's been great, and I look forward to doing another show with you down the road, possibly right after you do this conference in Sacramento in November. I would really like to know how you are received, what the audience feedback is, what the organizational feedback is. I think that would be a real important update if you're up for it.
Sure, and there's an open call to papers for that, too.
Can anyone attend that conference, by the way? Can mainstream lay people attend it?
Yes, and you just have to pay the fee, and if anybody wants to write a paper, we'll review it, and if accepted, you can join me and Al Harrison, who's going to present a paper.
And Al will be on the show around that time again. He's a good personal friend.
Yeah.
And a great guy. How would people find out about that conference? Do you know their URL offhand?
It's www.californiasociologists.com, I believe.
And or .org.
You can also go to the calendar section on my website, and there's a link there.
Okay. And we'll look forward to having you back after that conference and getting an update to see what happened there with your program. I think it'll be very interesting, and I hope it's a great success.
Sounds great, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, and listeners, we have 3 space shows this coming week. We have a program tomorrow night with Jeff Feig, and we're going to be talking about the Space Frontier Foundation's Return to the Moon Conference next month in Las Vegas, then our regular Tuesday show. You don't want to miss that. Leonard David, the senior space writer from space.com, is coming back on the program. And then again, next Sunday, we're going to have a special guest who is the authority on the Atlas ICBM and the Atlas commercial rocket. So stay tuned. And thank you all for joining the Space Show. Goodbye.